D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, by our friend Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. Hi, Chad. How are you?
Doing great, guys.
So, Chad, let's start with the week that was in the college football playoff, and I want to ask you about Indiana. Indiana put the smackdown on Alabama yesterday, and what Kirk Cignetti has done with that program over the past couple of years is nothing short of remarkable. But what I'm curious about is, in today's world of the transfer portal and NIL, how replicable do you think what Indiana is doing for other teams?
I think it's incredibly easy. It's not easy, but teams are able to imitate what Indiana's done if you get the right coach. I think Vanderbilt's done it, not to the Indiana level, but they've transformed their program in the last couple of years with Clark Lea, with, you know, money in NIL, but also a good focus on veteran transfer players in the portal, and it's really worked out for them. I think you can look at a lot of programs. Ole Miss hasn't been great in high school recruiting, but they've done a really good job in the portal, and they've built that thing up. It just feels like Ole Miss versus Indiana is almost the perfect game that this country deserves right now with the NIL era. It would shatter all preconceived notions about what college football programs are. Ole Miss is one of the historically losingest programs in the SEC. Indiana is the losingest program of any Power Four conference team. I just think it'd be perfect if it was those two teams that were left. Now, I say all that to also say there's only one Kurt Cignetti, and that guy is unbelievable. I mean, I watch Indiana play, and I don't know what you guys think when you watch them, but they look like the most well-coached team in history. They always make the right play. They always make the right decision. It is unbelievable to watch that team play the game of football. So it's very impressive, but I think you can replicate what they've done if you have a solid commitment financially in NIL and you find the right coach that develops the right culture. I think any program out there, is they're all looking around and saying, why not us if Indiana can do it?
Chad, since we last spoke, Tennessee's season ended in losing fashion, 30-28 against Illinois here at the Music City Bowl. You know all of this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. My friend Adam Sparks over at the Knoxville News Sentinel wrote that UT finished with an 0-5 record against FBS teams with a winning record and 7-0 against FBS teams with a losing record. So let me ask you this as our resident Vols fan. How should the Tennessee football program feel heading into 2026?
I mean, it was a disappointing year. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It was a bad year for Tennessee football. I mean, they finished 8-5. But, yeah, I mean, they beat the teams they should beat. They had a close call against Mississippi State, a pretty close call against an Arkansas team they should have handled better. But against the good teams, they came up short. You could put the what-if game in there. You know, hey, you lose two All-American, All-Conference caliber corners really before the season starts. Dermond McCoy never played a snap. Ricky Gibson played about a quarter and a half of football before he was lost for the season. That certainly put their defense behind the eight ball, but the defense wasn't good enough. The offense wasn't good enough in the biggest moments. They had a kicker issue, which I just saw in the last 15 minutes, that Max Gilbert has entered the portal. That's good news for Tennessee fans. It was a bad year for him in the biggest of moments. He missed another kick against Illinois that could have been the difference. So, yeah, look, I think it's a disappointing year for Tennessee. But the key for Josh Heupel was to not bury his head in the sand and say, hey, I've done a pretty good job here for 5 years. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to stick with my friends. I'm going to stick with my coaches. Instead, you got to take a long look in the mirror and be willing to adjust. And I think what we're seeing so far from Heupel is that he's doing just that. He fired Tim Banks and hired Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator. He let the contract expire of his strength coach, who's been there with him since Central Florida. He's making some moves that I think shows a guy that knows this is a program at a crossroads going into year number 6. It's got to be better next year. And, guys, that schedule is not going to be any easier a year from now from what they face this year. So I'm not saying, you know, it's all hot seat for Josh Heupel, but he's got to show improvement. And I think it starts with making sure you get the defense right. And that's going to be going heavy in the portal and seeing if Jim Knowles and his system, if it can take quickly. If they can do that, and you figure out quarterback also. And I think Tennessee has a chance to be pretty good again next year. But as far as the postmortem on this season, yeah, it wasn't good enough. And I think that Music City Bowl kind of encapsulates the whole season when you got a 3rd and 6 and in a dumb way, you jump off sides to give them 3rd and 1 and that ends the game. That pretty much sums up Tennessee's season.
Now, which dominance do you think was a little bit more surprising? The Hurricanes' dominance over Ohio State, they held them to under 50 yards rushing, or the dominance that Indiana had over Alabama?
I mean, I think it was Indiana, D-Mace, mm-hmm. because it was just – it was the way in which they did it. Like, we knew Miami's defense was really good, and they've got NFL talent on that defense. By the way, Jacoby Thomas at safety would have looked pretty good in Tennessee Orange this year had they paid up and kept him. That was someone they could have used because he was all over the field in that Ohio State game for Miami. Yeah, I think that the Indiana dominance because they rushed for over 330 yards, just how they physically won the line of scrimmage against Bama, both sides of the ball. I think that didn't surprise me that they won there. It surprised me they whipped Bama the way that they did. Now, I'm surprised that Ohio State is not going to be right there competing for another national championship because I do think they probably have the best roster in all of college football. But Indiana showed that that offense has some cracks in it, and you can get to them, and I think Miami feasted on that and did a really good job defensively. So if you're asking me the biggest surprise, it's got to be Indiana by 35 over Alabama. I thought Indiana would win. I didn't think they were going to dominate to that level.
Now, looking at the two quarterbacks that are the marquee guys, Dante Moore and obviously Mendoza, which one has to do more in order for their team to get where they need to go? Because, I mean, obviously you would look at Mendoza and say, well, their defense is just so dominant, and they play together as a team. But Oregon's defense, they're no slouches either.
Yeah, I mean, I really think for both guys, it's about the same because they've got a stable of good running backs. They got good receivers. They've got a dominant defense. I mean, I think it was, 20-10 when they met in Eugene earlier this year. I really think the script is really similar for both Oregon and Indiana, which I think makes for a great matchup because we saw how good Oregon is defensively shutting out Texas Tech in that playoff game. So I think for both guys, it's about not making the big mistake, which they've shown that they're able to avoid. Dante Moore, you know, had a big interception in the first matchup with Indiana on a ball that was batted up into the air. But other than that, he was pretty solid in that game. I just think Indiana and Oregon are so good on both sides of the ball, especially defensively, that it's really going to come down to who doesn't make the big mistake, who can get the ground game going a little bit better, because both defenses, I think, are going to show up ready to play, and they're going to play well.
I'm talking to Chad Withrow, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. And Chad, you know, one other observation, and we just got done talking about this before you came on, but I'd love your insight on it. The value you put on these bowl matchups, I'm sure you watched Tennessee and Vanderbilt, but the physicality, like Vanderbilt was completely neutralized running the ball. They couldn't run it against Iowa. Iowa physically beat Vanderbilt up front, and Vanderbilt all year long in the SEC, they were very strong in that area week in and week out. So, are we willing to concede a little bit? Because I think you're an SEC snob like me, but the Big Ten has closed the gap here, I think, on how to build a team and how to win the battle in the trenches.
Willie, I think a couple of things, and I think you hit the nail on the head with this. First off, that the biggest surprise to me of bowl season may be Iowa physically pushing Vandy around the way they did. Because I just thought the way Vandy's played this year, and they play so well with a chip on their shoulder, that getting snubbed from the playoff and all those guys playing, everybody except for Stowers, they were going to come out ready to roll, and I thought they were going to dominate Iowa. I mean, I felt very strongly about that, and it was really the opposite until Vandy got it going offensively in that second half. But Iowa just physically looked dominant in that game, and that surprised me. I think, yes, you have to be the biggest SEC snob to come out of this postseason and say the SEC is far and away the best conference in college football. I think to an extent that we are a little bit brainwashed by ESPN because all of the games that we watch are on ESPN and they have the rights to all of the SEC. So I do think that they do a pretty good job of selling the SEC more than other conferences. And I also think that from a culture standpoint, and I don't know if this is right or wrong. I think it's wrong, but others may argue against me on this. I think in the SEC, we have put it in our head so much as fans and people who follow and cover the conference that if you are out of the playoff mix, your season is ruined. It's over. It doesn't matter. Bowl games don't matter. They're an exhibition. That's why more SEC players opt out of these games than any other conference. That's why fans pretend to not care about bowl games, whether they do or don't. And I think the Big Ten culturally, they get in those games, especially against SEC teams, and they got something to prove. I mean, you saw Iowa taking victory laps over Vandy on social media with everything Diego Pavia said in the offseason on Bussing with the Boys about the Big Ten and Iowa and everything else. I mean, they knew it going in. They had something to prove. I think Illinois felt like they had something to prove against Tennessee and the SEC. So, yeah, I think the culture of the two conferences are very different. And when it comes to finishing out a season and doing it the right way, Willie, I think the Big Ten is superior to the SEC when it comes to team culture and what they're all about. And the SEC is going to have to figure that out and improve moving forward, or it's going to continue to shift in the direction of the Big Ten.
All right, Chad, I got to get your take on what we think is going to happen with Ole Miss here and the Lane Kiffin thing. Lane Kiffin loves to seek the attention. He's going to throw gasoline on the fire. He's going to not be ignored. You got all these assistant coaches. Well, how is this going to shake out?
How about Lane Kiffin also, Willie, trying to get with ESPN to get an interview during the game, which I thought was the most Lane Kiffin thing ever. And I'm honestly shocked ESPN said no. They're like, yeah, that's probably not a good idea to bring you on and bring the attention to you during that game. I thought they would love the ratings and the attention it would get for him being on that and the way it'd be clipped constantly. Here's the way I think it's going to go. I think that he's going to say no more with my coaches. They're not going to help you anymore. They got to get to work in the portal. They got to get to work here with me. And Ole Miss is going to have to figure some things out because they're going to lose their play caller on offense. They're going to lose other coaches. And they're going to have some analysts or other coaches on that staff have to figure this thing out as they get ready for Miami, because I think Lane Kiffin is done, you know, playing nice guy with letting those guys coach the team that they committed to coach. And I got to think also, if you're Lane Kiffin, I mean, he's not ever going to feel this way because he's Lane Kiffin, but it's just a mistake. You don't bail out on a team in the midst of a championship run. By the way, a program that you could argue in an NIL era may be on par with LSU. Who knows what the future holds? I know right now Ole Miss is a lot better than LSU, and Ole Miss is in the Final Four, and Lane Kiffin isn't a part of it. So, look, I think the guy made a mistake. I think maybe deep down he realizes that, and because of that, he's going to take his ball and go home, and that means his coaches will be coaching for him and not for his old team.
So, but how do you practically do it? That is a question. If he does basically say to all these guys, hey, you work for me, you can't stay, then, boy, I'm sure Ole Miss has thought of this, and they would figure out how do we do it, but that is a huge thing that could affect the game.
Oh, huge. And I think that's what he's going to do. Now, here's what I don't know. I don't know their contract situation. Is there a memorandum of understanding that's signed? Because if I'm Pete Golding and I'm talking to Charlie Weiss Jr., let's say, aren't you making a pitch to not go with that guy? Like, I know that he's already committed and said he's going to LSU, but is the paperwork signed? I don't know what's in the contract. I don't know what kind of buddy agreement LSU and Ole Miss worked out. There's also a report coming out now that Ole Miss is going to file a tampering charge against LSU. But I think that's kind of hard to file when you're cooperating with coaches of another school to be in your building to help prepare the team for playoff games. I mean, I think naturally some tampering is going to take place. So, yeah, I don't know where we go from here. I just know that if I'm Pete Golding and I'm Ole Miss, I mean, I think tampering kind of works both ways. Like, if a contract's not signed, aren't you trying to recruit them and pay them to stay? Especially Charlie Weiss Jr., who, by the way, has proven himself to be an excellent play caller in these last two games in the playoffs and throughout his time at Ole Miss. So I don't know where we go from here. I just don't think that LSU and Lane Kiffin are in the mood to cooperate anymore.
Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Friday. Chad, great stuff as always. Happy New Year. We'll catch up next week.
Happy New Year, fellas, and have a great weekend.
You as well. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, I asked Chad how Tennessee should feel heading into 2026. Let's talk about how Vanderbilt should feel heading into 2026 after the Commodores' season ended with a loss in the ReliaQuest Bowl to Iowa. 615-737-1025 tonight on Totally Hits 93.3. Catch MTSU men's basketball as the Blue Raiders take on Louisiana Tech at 6:30 p.m. Coverage is also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com.